it's fairly obvious which passage of Scripture we want to look at today. And just as last week we looked at the feeding of the 5,000 from three different viewpoints, I kind of felt like I wanted to do that again this week. But this time, instead of three different people, or I should say rather than, I want to focus on the disciples this week. Three different accounts of this same particular event are given by Matthew, Mark, and John. For some reason or other, Luke does not record this event. We're not sure why. But three different perspectives kind of give us a little bit of a different slant on what happens here. This is a very interesting miracle to me. Interesting because it really serves no other purpose than to amaze the disciples, which is a pretty important one. But it doesn't have any sort of practical purpose like feeding or healing. And in a way, this is flashy. You know, if you ever appreciated people that have a certain flair about them, you know, this demonstrates one side of Jesus. This is flair. I mean, walking on the water. Wow! I mean, who does that? Who would even think to do that? Why would that even be important? Well, there's some interesting insights we get as we look closely at the particular events as these particular disciples give them to us. There's some indication here, at least I believe it's in Mark, that he didn't even mean at first for them to see him. He meant to sort of pass them by. So I want to go through this morning and take a look at what each of them saw and what we can learn from each of these particular accounts. Very interesting, I think. So we compare the accounts, first of all, Matthew 14, 22 through 33. I'll just give you some of the details here. Jesus dismissed them so that he could go off by himself and pray. As Steve mentioned at the Lord's Supper, Jesus did go off by himself to pray here. And he did so frequently. Now, Luke does mention that in several different places. Jesus often withdrew by himself to lonely places to pray, I believe Luke will say. Prayer was important to him. Prayer was important to the Son of God. How much more important should it be to us? Jesus needed that prayer. He needed that connection with his Father. He needed to get off by himself. As he tells the disciples in the Sermon on the Mount, close the door, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who sees you in secret. That's what you do. That's part of your spiritual life. Now, on this particular occasion, it says in Matthew that the boat that the disciples were in while Jesus is praying, they're out on the water and they're encountering a very stiff headwind. And it says in Matthew that he came to them in the fourth watch of the night, which is somewhere between 3 and 6 a.m. He'd spent a lot of time praying before he started out on his journey across the waves. So somewhere between 3 and 6 a.m., Jesus walks across the water, and when the disciples see him, according to Matthew, he said they all thought they saw a ghost. Well, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because our normal perception of things is, no, people don't walk on the water. And if we see something that looks like a person walking on the water, what's the first thing we're going to think? That's not real. That's some otherworldly thing, whether we might think it's a ghost. We would certainly think that's just not happening. You know, that's probably what we would think. That's really not, and it would take, you know, a sort of really somehow getting that in your head that it really is who we think it is. So they thought they saw a ghost. Now, Matthew mentions that at this point they're fearful because they've been encountering this very stiff headwind. And they're perhaps exhausted from rowing. They're only 3 to 4 miles offshore, which I think is what John mentions. That's not very far for the amount of time they've been rowing. Okay, and so they're having a pretty difficult time. Jesus tells them, all right, don't be afraid. They apparently cried out in fear when they saw this image, we'll call it. And he says, don't be afraid. And now, Matthew mentions something that nobody else mentions. He mentions that Peter goes out on the water with him. We'll come back to that in a minute. Why does Matthew do that? Why is Matthew the one who mentions that? Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of a key here to why I think this happens. We know that there are four gospel accounts, And we know that each one of them gives a slightly different perspective on what they saw Jesus do. We believe they all blend together to give us one whole picture, that none of them are telling us something that's not true. They're just giving us a little bit of a different perspective. And when the Holy Spirit inspired these men, He didn't dictate to them. They didn't go into some kind of trance and have them sort of dictate all the words on paper. We believe that God used something of their personalities to show something different about what Jesus was. All of them true, but somewhat slightly different. And I think that's part of what happens here. Matthew has an impression here that we'll come back to that I think is very significant for Matthew's perspective on what goes on here. Well, in Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 51, we have Mark's account of the same thing. And he has a lot of the same details. Also, Jesus is going off by himself to pray. Now, in verse 48 of Mark chapter 6, it says very clearly, from Mark, Jesus meant to pass them by. So Jesus was just going to meet them on the other side. He was not going out to say, hey, look here. He was not trying to be flashy, although I think it's pretty flashy. He mentions their fear of him being a ghost, same thing Matthew mentions. But he leaves out Peter walking on the water. Now, that strikes me as a little bit odd. And the reason it strikes me as a little bit odd is because we have some traditional writings, some writings outside the New Testament, and we don't necessarily know that they're all true, but most people have understood that it's probably the case, that what Mark has done in giving us the gospel, he's given us Peter's memories of the gospel. He's basically written down what Peter told him. So I kind of stopped and thought, well, now, why doesn't Mark giving Peter's rendition of what doesn't Mark put down here that Peter walked on the water? Maybe significant, maybe not, but certainly worth a thought. Now, the one thing that Mark does here that's different from the others, Mark brings out this idea of their hardness of heart concerning the loaves. He says they didn't understand about the loaves. That's why they were afraid. And, you know, you kind of wonder, well, what are the loaves? Remember, feeding of the 5,000 last week, and we noted that often they didn't kind of understand that. They lacked the faith to see that Jesus could always provide for them. There's something about faith here that Mark is trying to tell us, or should we say Peter trying to tell us. So they didn't understand about the loaves. That's Mark brings that out, gives us this insight into the disciples' sort of corporate thinking. But then we have the Gospel of John. John, I think, for me, the way I understand the Gospel of John and the way it's written, is kind of the most unusual because he does not mention the prayer. He does not mention that Jesus went off by himself to pray. He does give this detail that they were about 3 or 4 miles offshore. He says they were rowing. Well, that makes sense because from knowing something about sailing, you know that if you have a sail up, you are not going directly into the wind. You cannot. It is impossible to go directly into the wind. You have to kind of go at an angle. So they're going directly into the wind, but they are encountering a very stiff headwind, and it's difficult rowing. The waves are against you. The sea is against you because the wind is pushing the sea this way, and you're trying to go against it. So they're having a pretty tough time, and my guess is the waves are breaking over the boat. They're wet. They're probably cold. They're certainly tired. John's account, though, is very brief. And that sort of like, what's going on with John? He saves most of his insights for what happens when Jesus arrives on shore. And you remember, that's what we talked about last week. The crowd wonders how Jesus got there in verses 22 through 25, because apparently the crowd had seen that Jesus did not get into the boat, but that the disciples got in the boat and crossed over. So when the crowd gets over there to find Jesus, they see Jesus there and they go, what are you doing here? How'd you get here? It almost seems to me that Jesus mentions the walking on the water just to kind of provide a link. Here's how he got here. Now, the people on the shore don't know that, but John, later on, you know, putting that detail in, he notes, well, that's how Jesus got there. Again, kind of flashy, but John doesn't make a big deal of it. It's more like a link between the different conversations people have about Jesus, between the feeding of the 5,000 and this discussion he has with them later on. Well, let's take a look again. What did each man see and why did he provide those details? Let's think about that for just a minute. Matthew, what do we know about Matthew? Matthew was a tax collector. Certainly not a seafaring man. Not a man accustomed to being on the water. And so perhaps, and again, I'm supposing a little bit here, Matthew gets a lesson here about Peter walking on the water. I think Matthew was impressed. I think he saw Peter go out on the water and he go, wow, that's a pretty brave man. I don't even like being in the boat to begin with. But here's a guy that goes out and walks on the water with Jesus. Now, admittedly, you know, his initial courage and then his fear, it sort of gives way to fear, you know, because Peter starts to sink when he sees the wind. But I think Matthew sees that and he says, you know, there's a real lesson in faith here that we need to remember. First of all, Peter was courageous. Peter had faith. He had more faith than I could have. Speaking from Matthew's perspective, I would have never done that. And yet Peter gets out there and he falters at some point. I just really think this left a very strong impression on Matthew. Why else would he give us this detail when nobody else does? Other than to say, you know, we can all have that kind of faith. That's the kind of faith Jesus wants us to have. We were all afraid in the boat. We saw a ghost, or what we thought was a ghost. We were still afraid. And yet Peter goes out there. Peter sees the wind and he's still afraid. But Jesus says, what's everybody afraid of? It's like Jesus is just so calm in the whole thing that we're like, yeah, how did you do that? How can we have that same kind of faith? I think Matthew is remembering and he's telling the church that you can have that kind of faith. Now Matthew notices something else very interesting here in verse 33. He says, those in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. Now this is, by the way, before what we consider to be Peter's great confession in Matthew chapter 16. But it's also after a confession that they make based in Mark chapter 4 and verse 41. You may remember there was one other time the disciples were in the boat and Jesus did something pretty powerful. They're in a boat on the sea and there's a major storm happening all around them. They were afraid the boat was going to sink. Jesus is in the back of the boat. He's fallen asleep. He's so tired that even during the buffeting of the waves and the wind and the boat rocking back and forth, he goes to sleep. They wake him up and say, Lord, don't you care that we're about to drown? And he says, what are you worried about? And he stands up in the middle of the boat, in the middle of the storm, and just tells the storm to be quiet. And the storm is quiet. And everything's calm. And Mark notes in Mark chapter 4, verse 41, that they all looked around at themselves and they said, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? So there's something about what Matthew also sees here that's consistent with, there's something about this guy. There's something about a guy who can calm a storm. There's something about a guy who can walk on the water, who has that much control over nature itself, that he can do those things. Mark's lesson is also kind of unique among the three. Mark, as I mentioned, relates it to their lack of understanding about the loaves. Now, in Matthew chapter 16, verse 7, Matthew points that same thing out. They didn't understand about the loaves. They're always worried about bread. They're always worried about physical things. And it's still, I think, and I think this is Mark's point, it's still a faith issue for Mark. The loaves, Jesus, I think, uses those to represent how they should not worry because Jesus can and will provide for them. They don't get it. Later on, after this first feeding of the 5,000, and after the feeding of the 4,000, they're still worried about whether or not they got enough bread. That's what we see in Matthew chapter 16. And I think Mark brings that out here, and shall we say Peter brings that out here, that, you know, they were all hard of heart. They really, none of them got it. And I don't know, maybe this is Peter also. And he doesn't want to mention the fact that he got out of the boat to walk on the water. Maybe he's being a little humble here. Maybe he's still a little embarrassed, perhaps, that he sank. But he was the only one that got out of the boat. He was the only one with that much courage. And yet, what I think Peter is trying to remind us here is, guys, you know, we were all of us, including me, really still didn't get it. We still didn't fully comprehend the faith that it takes to follow this man. The fact that we can trust him in anything. The fact that he's going to provide for us. The fact that he is going to protect us. None of us got that. It was still a trust issue for us, and we didn't have it yet. We weren't there. Mark, I should say Peter through Mark, points out that lack of faith. Well, then we move on to John. What was John's message? I think, again, his link. He just links Jesus to the discussion about the crowd seeking food. Remember that last week? The crowd came, and the only reason they came, according to Jesus, was that they just wanted food. That was, as we kind of put it in the mind of the little boy's father. You know, this is a great way to go get our living taken care of. And so maybe that's what a lot of people really thought. John doesn't seem to draw any other meaning from the actual walking on the water part. His interest is simply to show how Jesus got there. And once there, Jesus discusses that he is the bread of life. Something the other writers don't include at all. They don't have any of that discussion in John chapter 6. But you see, once again, it's a faith issue here, isn't it? You have to trust that what you really need is the bread that gives you true life, not the bread that gives you life in this life. On this earth, not physical bread. Maybe the collective lessons that we all learn here are fairly obvious to us, I'm not sure, but they're certainly worthy of being reminded again, are they not? Number one, don't be afraid. That's a pretty memorable phrase from Jesus. It's I, don't be afraid. Jesus will provide food. Again, problem with the loaves. We want food. We want you to provide for us. I'll take care of that. Just trust me on this. Jesus will protect you during the storms of life. So don't be afraid of those as well. Jesus is not always going to be here, by the way, to stand up in the boat and tell the storm to go away. Jesus is not always going to walk across the water while you're in your storm of life, but you must believe that he is there with you, because that's what he says. I will be with you always to the very end of the age. Don't be afraid. Maybe it's glib. Maybe it even sounds a little cliche-ish, but it is indeed one of the lessons we learn here, isn't it? Don't be afraid. And maybe we should put a little caveat in there. Don't let your fear get the best of you. Because I think that's kind of what Peter did. Peter wasn't afraid at first. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you. He walks out on the water with him. But then what does he do? It says he saw the wind. He looked around. He took his eyes off of Jesus. And he was afraid when he saw the wind. And that's kind of what we do. We watch the wind. We watch the turmoil around us. And it becomes paralyzing for us. And so Jesus reminds us, don't be afraid of that stuff. Second lesson, have faith. I think consistent with the lesson, don't be afraid. Trust Jesus. The issue with the loaves demanded the same trust as that of walking on the water. You had to believe that it could be done. The disciples had to believe that they really did see Jesus walking on the water. They had to get it through their heads that he really did multiply the loaves and the fishes at least twice, the 5,000 and then the 4,000. They had to believe that, and that if you really believe that, just trust that I'll take care of what you need. Not necessarily what you want, but what you need. I will take care of those things. And so I think the lesson here also is keep your eyes on him. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, I think says it better than I can say it, certainly. Just pretty typical. It's the word of God, so it should say it well, huh? Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Have faith. Keep your eyes on him. And finally, worship him. Worship this Jesus. He's not just the Messiah. He's not just a great teacher. He's not just a person who walked around and did miracles. The whole point of all that is he is the Son of God. No other religious leader can claim that. No other religious leader that I know of did something as flashy as walking on the water or calming a storm. I may be a little ignorant of some of the ins and outs of every religious leader that has ever claimed anything in this world, but my guess is none of them really quite have this. None of them really can truly claim to have power over nature the way Jesus did so many times. And it's the very reason that these impressions stuck with the disciples. Oh, they're not getting it yet. They're still, you know, Jesus hasn't been resurrected yet. They're still hard of heart, just like all of us are. We're kind of all in that same boat. You know, we're all a little stubborn. We're all a little kind of slow to get things, kind of slow on the uptake, you know. Slow to see those spiritual matters that really are the important ones. And yet, if we worship him, those things begin to fall into place. What kind of man can walk on the water? Only a man who was also God. And that's what they finally got. And so I would simply conclude with two things today. Number one, remember the loaves and remember the water. Imitate the faith that the disciples finally got from remembering those things also. Let's stand.